Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 12:59 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. It isn't. It's Pacific Standard Time, and today is November 14th. I've had a number of questions, and there's certainly been a number of articles talking about the fact that this is a market top. But let's just look at the price action. We've had certainly an acceleration back in 2017. There was a lengthy period of consolidation, and there was certainly a surprise on the downside at the beginning, towards the end of last year. At the beginning of this year, we've had a significant rebound. Off the low in January, the market is up really very significantly. So, but we're now breaking on the upside. I think the most important thing we've seen recently on the price is that we had an upside weekly key reversal right there at the beginning of June. If anyone was looking for confirmation of support in the region of the trend mean, then that was it. And subsequent to that, we've had a sequence of higher reaction lows. In itself, it was also a higher reaction low because it was the first significant pullback following the counter trend rally that we saw in the first quarter of the year. Now the market, despite all the pieces of bad news, is at a new all-time high. Now, I think this is a time to remember that monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time. Additionally, fiscal policy is equally important. And right now, we have both stimulative monetary and fiscal policy. Now, having both of those together at a time when the US economy is at a period of record employment, still expanding, and where asset prices are high by historical standards, particularly relative to income, if we're talking about housing, or relative to historic PE ratios or cyclically adjusted PEs, if you're talking about stocks, and yet we're seeing additional stimulus. I think the most important thing to remember is that that works for a while, and it is highly stimulative. It contributes to additional asset price inflation. That's one of the reasons why I think that it is more than likely that we're going to have a bubble evolve in some asset class before we eventually start to see the pressures from running these enormous deficits start to really bear down. When we listen to what Jay Powell had to say today, well, some of his prepared remarks were obviously well in the market already, but he has made the point on more than one occasion and repeated it again in here today that the path of federal deficits that the US government is running at present is unsustainable. But of course, it is sustainable for as long as they're willing to run the deficits. And as long as those deficits continue to increase, then that is likely to be stimulative to the market. One of the defining characteristics of this bull market that's evolved over the course of the last decade is that it has been liquidity fueled. That liquidity has come from the central banks, most particularly. The size of central bank balance sheets on aggregate has increased from negligible levels to approximately 19.6 trillion over the course of the last decade. A lot of that money has then, as a derivative function, moved into asset prices, whether that is property or stock markets or bonds. Bonds in particular are at extraordinarily rich levels, and stock markets are just breaking on the upside. Well, what this says to me is that we are due another big push on the upside. Well, then, obviously, the people that are worried about the state of the world and the direction in which things are going and the really quite likely outcome that we are moving into a bubbly environment, they are going to be thinking, well, what is it that would then derail that? What could potentially signal that this incredible bull market over the last decade is in fact over? Personally, I think that there are two important points. The first is that we've had three very big ranging phases on the S&P 500. The first between 2011 and 12, the next between 2015 and 16, and the last, our most recent, between 2018 and approximately 5 weeks ago. On each of those occasions, we've seen that there were bigger pullbacks, and the pullbacks have been somewhat larger than anything that had preceded during the trending phases. During the trending phases, the 200-day moving average has been particularly useful as an area where investors have been willing to buy the dip. We've started to see that being reasserted again since the upside key reversal in June. But then when we think about the 200-week moving average, or the 1,000-day moving average, then that has been a much better arbiter of the extent to which the market can pull back after the trending phases, when it moves into one of these 18-month medium-term corrections. Now, the point, of course, being that because we've seen three of these already, people are starting to talk about the fact that we've had mini recessions, and that's a healthy signal. It allows some of the excess to be worked off. All of that is true. In order to confirm that the secular bull market is in fact over, we would need to see a sustained move below that 1,000-day moving average. The wider the overextension relative to that 1,000-day moving average, the greater the likelihood is that we are approaching a bubbly phase. We can already see that the 1,000-day moving average is at 2,500 and change, and the stock market is trading at over 3,000. So that's about a sixth. Well, it's more like 20%. So what that is suggesting is the market could pull back by 20% and still be above the 1,000-day moving average. Now, there is the potential here that if the market continues to rally here, and I suspect that it will, we're going to get an even wider overextension. And then, of course, valuations will also have increased. One thing that I found rather interesting in here today, and it was a graphic from Yardini Research, where they're looking at margin debt. Now, generally speaking, when you're talking about the quantity of money that's being borrowed to invest, and there is obviously a way of thinking about the leverage in the market, you would anticipate that leverage would increase in line with the market. Now we're getting a divergence. I'm rather curious to know how they've come up with their figure, because the way that we used to monitor this data was to look at the NYSE margin debt figures, but it hasn't been updated since November of 2017. So where the new data is coming from, I would be rather interested to find out if any subscribers have got some insight into where that data can be found. I would really value seeing it. When we then think about corporate profits, we're at a point where there is the one way to think about it is that earnings don't matter in the short term, they do matter in the long term. This index does not get updated all that often. It was supposed to be updated 2 weeks ago. They've pushed the date out again to the 27th this time. It isn't updated all that regularly. It's only about once a quarter in any case, and it's done so with a lag. But the bigger picture is that corporate profits have gone nowhere since about 2012. And it has historically been a lead indicator for a future recession when corporate profits start to decline for obvious reasons. It pushes up the PE ratio when they're not making as much money. Well, it has been almost completely static for nearly 7 years. And when that eventually does turn downwards, then that is something that we can pay attention to. But we are seeing such a wall of money hitting the market. And that's most particularly from the Federal Reserve right now. They've added in $300 billion in just the last month. And it's not stopping. They have a problem in the repo market, regardless of whether people are willing to give credence to that view or not. This is a problem. The banking sector has no longer got the ability to arbitrage some of the movements in the repo market, and therefore that is necessitating that the Federal Reserve has to open up its balance sheet to manage that risk. One of the mismatches that we have is between the Fed funds rate in the repo market and the overnight rates that other central banks can avail of. Well, the USA still has higher rates than just about everywhere else, and that creates a demand for dollars. One of the reasons why the US dollar is continuing to remain reasonably steady in here is because of that mismatch. But the bigger point, of course, is that when we think about what it is that the Fed is doing, by opening up their balance sheet and by acting as a backstop for the repo market, they are exposing themselves to unlimited liability. They're becoming the central bank effectively to the world. And what that is in fact doing is creating a massive source of potential liquidity. And that's one of the reasons why stock markets continue to go higher. Now, this is not a short-term solution. If they do in fact create a standing repo facility, then the quality of assets that the central bank is willing to accept will have to deteriorate. And that they've already done that by accepting mortgage bonds, but that was domestic mortgage bonds. The question now is, what exactly is it that will be posted as collateral in the repo market and that the Fed will have to accept on an overnight basis? What it is in fact doing is beginning to think about how they can absorb some of that risk without creating a big mismatch. And I do think that the TED spread hasn't been relevant for at least the last decade, but it's relevant now. It's something that we really should be paying attention to, because when we look at the long-term trend, then we can clearly see that it has been popping on the upside since the middle of this year. Now, it's still at depressed levels. It was at 70 basis points a couple of years ago. It was at 70 basis or 60 basis points about 12 months ago. So it is pushing on the upside here. It's not at an alarming rate today. In fact, it would have to go up and stay above 60 basis points on a reasonably sustained basis in order to really confirm that there is trouble in the banking sector. But what we can also say is that the volatility in this spread has picked up a lot in the last 3 years, particularly relative to what it looked like from 2009 through to 2016. And I do think this is worth paying particular attention to. It is not a problem today. It has the potential to be a problem in future. The banking sector has been a little weaker over the course of the last few days. That is in lockstep with a somewhat steadier environment on treasuries. I think it's also, though, worth considering that we'd had a fairly substantial move on the 10-year yield. It got right up to test the 2% level, which was the first area of potential resistance, and now we are getting a little consolidation. Now, there has been a sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of September, and the minimum requirement to question that we're not still in a supply-dominated environment for government bonds would be a sustained break in that sequence of higher reaction lows. The yield has just about unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean. So there is, I think, scope here that we get a little consolidation. I do, however, think that it is more likely than not that we are going to see further uptick in yields. when we then think about what's going on in Europe, well, the European banking sector is also consolidating here, but it is back above its trend mean, and there is the potential that it will be able to unwind it, or I think sustain the move back above the 200-day moving average. I'm going to move this moving average back to 40 weeks on this chart. When we look at the longer-term chart, we can obviously see that 80 has been an area of support in 2012 and 2016, and it is looking increasingly likely that a low of more than short-term significance has been reached. What I found rather interesting in here today was the rebound that we saw in the Greek market, and that also is steadying from the region of the trend mean and has been holding a sequence of higher reaction lows all year. When we look at what's going on in the commodity complex, I think it is worth paying attention to what's happening in a number of the industrial metals. Zinc, for example, has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. Aluminium has also been somewhat weaker in here and is encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. Copper prices have pulled back again, and now that short-term overbought condition has been replaced by a short-term oversold condition, but it has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows off the low in October. It's certainly going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. When we look at the London Metals Index, there is still a sequence of lower rally highs, and it has continued to encounter resistance in the region of that trend mean as well. Then when we look at the Australian dollar, it has failed in the region of the trend mean and pulled back in a rather dynamic manner in here today. Well, that was on the back of disappointing employment figures. When we look at the South African rand, there is it was a somewhat steadier day in here, but it is still really rather steady, or the dollar is steady above the trend mean right now. When we look at the Brazilian real, well, they've got certainly some stress in the domestic market that is putting upward pressure on the US dollar versus the real, and the real was at a new reaction low in here today. Now, there is a short-term oversold condition here, but this continues to look like a bullish consolidation for the dollar over beyond the very short term. The Mexican peso, I think, is one of the currencies most prone to the potential for some volatility. It was stronger by the close in here today. Now, if it can break the dollar sequence of higher reaction lows, then there's the real potential that it is going to be able to steady further from here. And certainly that would help to demonstrate support all the way back from the accelerated low back in 2017. But it's the development of this triangular pattern is something that almost guarantees that we're going to have a volatile environment, because when we get a breakout, it's likely to be powerful. Then when we look at the Canadian dollar, economic figures there have been coming out a little bit more positive. The big question, though, is it going to show any further signs of additional weakness? The Canadian dollar is right in the region of the trend mean. This is a natural area where we might anticipate some steadying coming through. I think one of the most important points, though, is that when we look at the industrial resources and we look at commodity-related currencies, then they're all looking pretty weak. And that is a direct relation, or I think reflection, of the weakness in the Chinese economy. And the renminbi is back weaker than 7 once more. It's unwound most of its oversold condition. When we look at that weekly chart, this just looks like a reversion back towards the mean and coming back to test an area of previous, or very simple, that an area of previous support now becomes resistance, I think is the clearest point that we can see from that chart. What that suggests is that there is the likelihood we're going to see additional weakness. The Hang Seng was in additional negative territory in here today, down another 247 points. It's pulled back by a fair amount already over the course of this week. It's coming back to test the sequence of higher reaction lows. But one thing that really stands out, particularly over the course of the last 8 or 9 months, is the size of the downward dynamics. When we look at the internal dynamics of the range, then the stabs on the downside are very much more aggressive than the rises. And that does hold out the prospect that we are going to see additional downside. The Shenzhen B shares are really just barely steady around the lower side of their range and have been really quiet over the course of the last couple of days. I do think that if we are looking at where the risks reside, they are in China. That the slowing down of the economy, the reluctance of the central government to pull on the traditional levers to stimulate growth because they're afraid both of domestic bubble risk, but additionally they do not want to lend assistance to the global economy against a background where they're being targeted for tariffs. And then of course there is the continued trouble that they have in Hong Kong, and they don't want to be seen to cave on Hong Kong or indeed to Trump. There's a clear intention to try and save face and to preserve the facade of being strong in their leadership. Then when we think about what's going on in India, well, there is certainly some consolidation going on around the 12,000 level, but this continues to look like a bull market environment. There has been a consolidation really going on for most of the last year. The succession of higher reaction lows has remained intact. There has certainly been a loss of momentum, so it's imperative that once we do get a breakout that it is sustained in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. What we are starting to see is that some of the most oversold shares in India are starting to do a little better. Tata Motors, for example, has rebounded. It is now back above the trend mean. Yes Bank was finally able to source fresh capital, and it has bounced. It's still got a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, but it has bounced enough, up over 100% in the last 6 weeks, in order to break that sequence of lower rally highs. What that is suggesting is that the corporate tax cut, the ability of some of these companies to source additional liquidity, the fiscal stimulus that the government is embarking on, that's all positive for asset prices. And the likelihood is that it will do for the Indian market what it has done for the US market. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the pound, well, the pound has continued to steady around the 128 area. There is the potential that we're going to see additional upside in here, particularly as some of the, or at least there is scope that the Conservatives will gain a majority. That would remove some uncertainty. It would ensure that the deal that has been agreed will pass. The market will view that as a positive because it removes uncertainty. There are still going to be a lot of people are really very ticked off because it is membership in all but name. But that's a medium-term consideration. In the short term, there's the potential for the pound to go up a little further from where it is right now, as not least as it's consolidating in the region of the trend mean. There's been a great deal of discussion about the outlook and the impact of negative interest rates and the potential for competitive devaluation of currencies. We're still looking at an environment where the global economy is expanding. And that's particularly true of the USA, and they've been willing to tolerate a strong currency, whereas just about everywhere else has been weakening their currencies. Well, The reason that gold has broken on the upside over the course of the last year and completed this six-year base formation is because, at least I believe, that investors are pricing in the potential for a competitive currency devaluation evolving among the major economies over the course of the next decade. And this continues to look like a first step above the base. As long as gold is holding the $1,350 area, then this is a first step above the base, and that is the first consolidation in a new bull market environment. I think when we look at, I think this is a rather interesting chart, is when we look at gold adjusted for inflation. Something we've seen on multiple occasions for major asset classes over the course of history has been at their tendency to pause in the region of really major historic peaks. So gold got up to its CPI inflated price back in 2011. We had a meaningful pullback and now we're starting to see it come back up again. Well, this is quite normal. For example, when we look at the NASDAQ 100, it got right up to test the peak of in 1999 and pulled back pretty sharply, but spent about a year and a half consolidating in the region of the previous peak, and then it broke on the upside. We've seen that happen on a significant number of the European indices. And I wonder, and obviously this isn't something that's going to be confirmed for a while, but I do wonder whether the inflation-adjusted peak that we saw in 2011 for gold was simply a hiatus. The potential is that if we are in a new bull market environment, that there is ample scope for gold to rally from here, particularly in an environment where there is competitive currency devaluation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.